We really believe you get what you pay for when you build out a cultivation facility. So like, we spare no expense when it comes to, you know, our lights, our room design, our drying, our curing. You can never stop improving ways to produce better quality. You can never stop finding ways to find efficiency.
Hey buds, welcome back to another episode of Weed Buds Radio. I'm excited to update you on a few things. As you know, Buds Emporium here in Medway is doing phenomenal and just continues to grow. We have the best vendors in the state and some that I want to introduce you to today. But when we first got started at Buds Emporium, it was not all rainbows and unicorns. It was a struggle and it was hard, especially as some of you know, we had a few other ventures that were going in the sustainability space and a few things that just took a turn during the pandemic. And so we had limited resources and we had to work with just the best brands, brands that were willing to work with us, that produced quality product that we were proud of. And there were so many, but there's one in particular that I want to introduce you all to today. And joining from the JAR team, the J in JAR, is Joel Pepin. Joel, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So it's cool, man. I've been walking around the store and I was looking at pictures side by side from where our shelves were in February of 2022 to where they are today, and just the work that we've done together when we opened. I remember having to ask Ryan if we could do 4 strains and make that up into a pound. So a quarter pound of 4 different things. And he kind of was like, we don't normally do that, but if that's what we need to do to help you get open, then okay. And I just remember we had 2 jars on each shelf, and here we are today with, you know, upwards of 12 strains sometimes from just your brand, concentrates and cartridges. And so it's just been so fun to grow and to grow with you. And I just want to say thank you for kind of helping us out in those early stages and helping us to be where we are today.
Man, it's been fun to watch, and thank you for the support and for the interest. And we've always really sort of had a lot of excitement for your geographical location. So watching the evolution of your business and seeing the whole thing grow from our perspective has been a lot of fun. And I might add, I'm actually very excited to announce this, but I do think we're going to be up your neck of the woods maybe mid-October to try to hike Katahdin before the park closes. So we were just talking yesterday, Adam and I were talking about coming up and maybe doing a JAR pop-up for the afternoon.
That would be amazing. So definitely everybody will have to check out our Facebook page and Instagram page for when that's announced, but we would love to have you here at the store and kind of showcasing what you all do. And I brought some samples for those that are tuned into our YouTube channel today, so you can kind of see some of the work. But that's so exciting, so I can't wait to have you all up here. And I originally thought JAR was stood for JAR in these beautiful jars that your product comes in. And I also brought, for those tuned into the video, a concentrates jar, so you can see that as well. The packaging's beautiful. So Joel, I always thought JAR just stood for these beautiful packaging that your brand incorporates into itself. And so can you tell me what JAR actually stands for?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're not the most creative people, right? And so when we were trying to figure out how to come up with a brand for our cannabis, we had all these different ideas and names, some with multiple syllables, and we couldn't really come up with something that felt right. And JAR is basically stood for Joel and Ryan. Cannabis company. My business partner Ryan and I started working together, you know, about a decade ago in sort of medical cannabis. And so it was simple, Joel and Ryan Cannabis Company, right? And it was a little bit of a play on words. You put your good weed in a jar. So we kind of like that component. And you know, it wasn't the most creative, but it just felt right out of all the different things that we came up with. So we stuck with it. And then, it's funny now it's actually stands for Joel, Adam, and Ryan. So, our business partner, Adam, he sort of came into ownership, years later after Ryan and I started working together. And we'd like to joke with Adam saying, you're lucky your name started with an A. Otherwise, I'm not sure if it would have worked.
That's right. You would have needed a new business partner. How fun. So how long have you and Ryan known each other then?
About 10 years, 10 or 11 years. We've known of each other for longer than that. We had, you know, we both kind of grew up in, I grew up in Auburn, he grew up in Turner, and there's a few years between us in age. So we knew of each other long before that, longer than that. We had we each had close mutual contacts that knew each of us. But he and I together about 10 years, 11 years.
Wow. So yeah. How did the three business partners are hard as it is. And in this space, I feel like it's even more of a challenge. There's, you know, even myself have had, I think from start till today, probably seven different partners. It's just, you have different visions, you have different levels of commitment. So what makes up a good team and how do you develop a good team? Because I've only seen and been able to watch about a year now, but it seems like all three of you really kind of have your silo of execution and you do it beautifully. And so I was just curious, like, how did that partnership come together and how do you guys keep that oiled up and frictionless?
Well, I mean, I think in any partnership, it's not always frictionless, right? So I think in any partnership, it's good, especially in the onset, to figure out, like, when there is friction, methods of working through that in a productive way, which we've been able to establish. So, I mean, I think the biggest thing for us, it's probably one of the biggest advantages we have as a company is the strength of our partnership, right? And for Ryan and I, early on, we just like I said, there's a few years age difference in us. And so where do I go with this? When I started as a medical caregiver, it was really early on in the program. It was late 2010, 2011. And for those watching that were around back then in the program, that was basically right when they came out with like caregiver registry cards. And so like Ryan was one of the first caregivers that received one of those cards. And you knew it by the way they numbered the cards. I think he might have been the second or third caregiver to receive one of those cards. I might have been like the 11th. And so we had met right around that time. And we just, you know, I don't know, we just had a lot of the same values. We were friends outside of business. We had sort of the same goals and beliefs around cannabis. You know, in a lot of ways, Ryan's been a mentor to me. I've looked up to him. He's a few years older and he's been able to sort of accomplish things. When I was just sort of trying to figure out how to get started in life, he was a little bit further ahead and there was a lot that I looked up to. And the way he was cultivating was sort of like on a different level even back then, which was like really eye-opening for me. So Ryan and I have a real close bond and partnership. We're the closest of friends outside of work. And it's not always easy to be friends and then have business. But for whatever reason, he and I have been able to navigate that, I think, very well. And I think he'd say the same. And we do anything for each other. And then I think when it comes to business, we just want to do the best that we can every day for our business. And we want JAR to be the best it can be. We're very passionate about that. We really want to make careers out of working in cannabis. We're both entrepreneurial, right? We don't ever want to think about like having to get a job somewhere else or to work for somewhere else. So we've always just wanted to run our own cannabis company and make that our job. And then Adam was a great fit. You know, so I think in terms of our partnership and our silos of expertise, Adam has sort of been watching JAR's evolution since I'd say like 2014. Adam's a childhood friend of mine. I grew up with Adam. I've known Adam since I was maybe 10 years old. So again, just a very strong bond of trust and sort of like knowing who the potential partner is and what they care about, what's important to them. So I think the three of us, we share a lot of the same goals and vision, right, for business and specifically for JAR. And, you know, I think we all have different areas of expertise, which is complemented each other very well, and it's translated very importantly to the business. So to break it down for everybody, Ryan really is, he oversees everything cultivation, and he is just, you know, what I've seen him do cultivation and what we do today, day in and day out with our cultivation team is so impressive to watch. And so really like producing consistent high quality flower has been the backbone of our brand over the past decade. So, and that's Ryan's wheelhouse, right? I have been a little bit more involved with building out the retail side of the business, overseeing concentrates and the extractions, as you know. I've done more of like trying to help find retail locations, getting towns to opt in, right? That type of thing, some of the lobbying stuff. And then Adam just has a really creative mind when it comes to just business strategy in general. So Adam's like a great sounding board for anything and everything that we're trying to scheme or consider. Adam really helps us, you know, keep our eyes on cash flow and cash management in a way that is not easy for me to do or for Ryan to do. So the three of us together, it's a lot of fun.
Now, you guys have been in this industry since the conception of really legal cannabis in the state of Maine. And so I'm fascinated to get your opinion on the medical industry versus the adult use side. And let's take it from the business perspective. What does it take to run a successful business on the medical side versus what does it take to run a successful business on the adult use side? Are the principles the same or is it dramatically different?
I would say the foundational principles that we have that made us successful would translate to all kinds of different businesses, not just medical cannabis, not just adult cannabis. It's translated well for Ryan and I in business interests, like outside of cannabis altogether. So it's just about, you know, being detail oriented, doing things right the first time, not cutting corners, treating people well. Like, honestly, a lot of what we do is just very basic things that we all believe strongly in, like treat others the way you want to be treated type of thing, you know, positive workplace culture. Only put out your best quality. And if you're going to do something, do it right the first time or else what's the point in doing it in the first place, you know? So, you know, to answer your question about what it takes to be successful medically versus adult, I mean, I think it's a lot of the same type of thing. Of course, like each market is at a different point in terms of its maturity and dynamics, right? But overall, I think the reasons we've been successful in adult use were extensions of the same reasons and principles that made us successful medically, right? And that's just like, for us specifically, when it comes to producing flower, like, we really believe you get what you pay for when you build out a cultivation facility. So like, we spare no expense when it comes to, you know, our lights, our room design, our drying, our curing. And in our evolution over the past 10 years, we've been fortunate enough to build out in like many different facilities in Maine and Massachusetts. And along the way, we've learned so much. So we really believe like you can never stop improving ways to produce better quality. You can never stop finding ways to find efficiency, right? And so, you know, that was a big part of our success medically. And of course, it's a huge part of what we're doing right now on the adult use side.
That's incredible. And just since I've known you all, which would say would be February of 2020, the growth has been incredible. I mean, from, you know, stopping by SJR Labs to the building that you have today, I mean, the growth is surreal. And I can only imagine that you have to have a lot of trust for each other to grow that fast, but it's like truly like you're trusting each other's families with each other. Like, you know, I got to meet Stephanie's mom the other day, you know, at the building. And I just thought that was so cool that, you know, everybody is truly involved and invested in the business. And, you know, with us, you know, although it's primarily Brooke and I kind of running the operations and the day-to-day here, it's my aunt and uncle and my parents and so many other people that have, you know, put blood, sweat, and tears into this building in order to create what we have today. So it really is kind of a passion project, but it just incorporates everybody. So there's just so much love there.
Yeah. I mean, for us, like it really is more than like a business partnership. It's more than a friendship. I mean, it's like a family, like Jar's a family to us. And we have our real families at home, but Jar is like such an important part of our lives. My life, Ryan's life, Adam's life, you know? And so we have this big Jar family, and for us, it is kind of surreal to look at like the evolution of what we've done together. And I think when Ryan and I started working together 10 years ago, like we had this hope of like, especially when the referendum question in 2016 was on the ballot, we were like, okay, if adult use cannabis passes in Maine, maybe there's a legitimate shot we could make a career of working in cannabis in Maine for the next 15, 20 years. So that was a hope that we had, but we didn't really know exactly how it would play itself out for us. So, you know, it is, we have my family's been involved in the business. Ryan's family's involved in the business. Like the team that we've built, like it's surreal, you know. And we look at the talented staff that we've been able to put together, and the different departments and managers, and it's like we've got this amazing team of people that, you know, that move JAR forward every single day. So it's incredible, and it's a lot of fun. It's a dream come true for sure.
Incredible. Now, before we move, I have a lot of questions about concentrates for you. But before we go, I just want to show those. And for those that are listening on the podcast, head over to weedbudsradio.com and you'll see a picture. I'm holding some bud that has come from JARCO. And it is, we were talking the other day here at the store, and we were talking about like, what is the brand behind JAR? And, you know, obviously like JAR's got a nice little shield, but like, what is the actual brand? And for us, it's like, it's quality. You know what you're opening when you open one of these jars. It's a quality piece of cannabis. And it's probably, you know, one of the best that there is that the state has to offer, if not in the country. And that's just a really special place to be. But it's something that the whole staff here, it's like, you know, JAR is so much more than just, you know, a word on a piece of paper. Like it really is that crack when you open a jar. So it's just really special. And so I wanted people to see that and kind of how that's packaged and just how beautiful. But one thing that I think we can all really learn about today is the different types of concentrates, because there's so many, you know, from live resins, cured resins, to the sugars and batters. And now I'm really excited because we have the hash rosin carts here at the store from your team, and those have been doing incredibly well. And for people like me, I just love that kind of product. So I was wondering if you could kind of help me differentiate, you know, for example, like to start, Joel, what's the difference between a cured product and a live product? So like a cured resin versus a live resin.
For sure. So cured typically means that the plant material that the concentrate was derived from, where it was extracted from, was dried material. So for us, like a cured resin cartridge, that was extracted from, you know, scissor trim material that was dry. It wasn't fresh frozen, right? And then so on the opposite side of that, a live resin or a live rosin means that it came from plant material that was immediately frozen right at the moment of harvest and was frozen up into and during the point of extraction. And so basically what that means, I think for the most part, cured means came from dry material, live means came from fresh frozen material. And I think the main difference is, you know, what we see in a lot of our test results that we have to do for every batch, like it's kind of funny, cured products sometimes and usually will have a little bit higher potency in terms of THC. The live products will be slightly less, but what you're getting in a live product is maximum terpene retention. For cured material, for cured concentrates that come from dry material, you know, that dry material went through a drying process. There were some terpenes that came off during that process from the plant material. So there just aren't as many terpenes available at the time of extraction. And so cured products for us, I mean, we freeze the dry trim as soon as the trim is clipped away from the flower, and we do everything we can to preserve, you know, terpenes from the dry material that translate into the cured products. And cured products can be phenomenal in terms of flavor profile. And you know, potency
and this would be considered a cured product, right? Like it's something that I would typically smoke or open from a package that would be cured.
Yeah. Your flower. Absolutely. And maybe we can talk later about like, you know, some of the techniques that we're using to really cure flower, but there's a serious art to it. And we're sort of like refining our approach to that. We've made some, big leaps forward, we feel, in our process over the past year. But yeah, your flower is cured. Cured concentrates are coming from dry material. Live concentrates typically are coming from your wet frozen material.
Interesting, because that right there, right? So resin and rosin, right? It's like, okay, live cured. I've now figured that out. So the live comes from the fresh plant that's frozen, then extracted, that's live. And then cured comes from something that we would just consume in practical terms that would be ready for extraction. So what's the difference between something like a resin and a rosin? Like, those seem exactly the same to me.
Yeah, it's like one letter that's different, right? But they're actually, it's a completely different extraction process. And one thing I think that's important to note on the live product. So like the frozen material that we're extracting from is whole plant. So it's like, it's for us, it's your A grade flower that you would smoke, like the wet version at harvest. And it's the trim that would get separated in a cured product meant for only extraction. So your live product isn't getting extracted from just like frozen trim. It's getting extracted from frozen whole plant material shucked from the stem, which is pretty cool. So the difference for us internally, and I think across the market, the difference between like a resin and a rosin. Rosin is concentrate that is extracted via no solvents. So solventless extraction. So for us, what we're doing, and we're really excited about doing this now in our current facility, is ice water extraction, right? And then go through some post-processing where you're basically just using pressure and temperature to separate out the rosin through a rosin press. So there's literally no solvents. You're using ice water as the solvent to extract the trichome heads from the plant material. And then we're using a press to sort of like refine the finished rosin material in the various forms that you would find in the store. Resins go through hydrocarbon extraction. So a blend of butane, propane, you're using a solvent to remove the trichome heads from the plant material. And then, of course, we go through post-processing to remove those solvents, and yields a concentrate that's still really good quality, but just went through a different extraction process.
Interesting. So now I'm curious, because I've got, so let's see, for example, this is ice cream cake cured batter. And I have, this is sour sniffets sugar. And so those are a little bit different, but if I had the like live rosin or live resin out, it might look a little bit similar to this, Joel. It might be a little bit soupier in consistency. What's the biggest difference between that? Because, you know, the batter and some of those resins, like, they seem similar, but they taste dramatically different. And so I'm guessing that those are a different process as well.
Yeah, they are a different process. I mean, the difference between like your batter and the sugar that you're showing there, similar extraction process. The batter sort of goes through a whipping motion to sort of blend the cannabinoids and terpenes into the consistency that you have there in front of you. The sugar goes through a little bit more of a lengthier post-processing, where essentially the concentrate yielded from extraction, we're trying to crystallize and crash out some of the THCA into the sort of more chunkier forms of the concentrate that you see there. We do have, what we try to do is retain a decent amount of terpenes with our sugar. So I think the difference between the two that you showed right there is there's obviously a difference in consistency. Sugar on average seems to test a little bit higher in its potency. Does have some terpenes with it, but not as terpene rich as the batter. So I think someone who's looking for like more of a flavor profile, and depending on your method of consumption, you know, you might want to steer them towards a batter. But someone coming in, again, depends on their consumption method, but someone who's looking for like a higher potency dabble concentrate, typically sugar is the direction you want to push them in.
In THCA is the precursor to THC, right? So THCA gets heated and then that becomes THC?
Yeah. So THC in its acid form is basically, as that's how THC occurs and is produced by the plant, right? And so THCA, when heated, converts to delta-9 THC, and delta-9 THC is what is psychoactive for us. That's what basically gives us the high that we feel. So your sugar that has a lot of THCA, has a high THCA value, as soon as you put that on your rig, or you put it, you know, on a bowl, and it, you know, you put your lighter to it, it's converting in real time, and you're consuming quite a bit of delta-9 as you inhale. And so that's sort of where you get that that psychoactive effect from.
Perfect. Now, as a retailer, one of the things that I'm really struggling with is how to properly display my concentrates, because I try to keep them dark and I try to keep them cool. And then I have to open each of them, you know, to let people smell them and check them out. And I have not figured out like the perfect way to display concentrates. And so as I'm looking at kind of building out the right display, I was wondering if you had any tips or tricks or things, because I know even people at home, they might get a jar of concentrate and just stick it on their desk and open it up a week later. And, you know, so what is the proper way for like a retailer to display concentrates? And then for once I take it home, how should I care for it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge for us too in our stores. A lot of the concentrates that we end up putting on display, you know, you need to be able to display a product if you really want to be able to showcase it to the customers coming in. But just by nature of having the lid off of it, showing in your display case, lights getting to it, it's degrading the concentrate slightly. So for us, a lot of times, like our display end up either getting destroyed or they're not sold to an end consumer. So you're kind of like sacrificing one out of the bunch to display. But when light's exposed to it, your terpenes are coming off of it. It is degrading the quality of the concentrates. For the most part, in terms of storage, I mean, for the majority of the concentrates, just the coolest temperature that you can get is the best, right? And then keeping it out of light. So ideally, like mid-60s to low-60s is the best way to sort of store your concentrates in a box, out of light. Most of what we do is shelf-stable and will retain its quality quite well. For the consumers, I think it's really important I think the biggest thing, especially during summertime, is like keeping any form of concentrate like in your car on a hot summer day. And that's like a real quick way for either a vape pen to go bad or shatter to get all, you know, liquefied. So the big thing is just like keeping it out of direct sunlight, keeping it away from heat. On the rosin side, and there's some versions of rosin, some SKUs of hash that actually need to stay refrigerated all up and through the point of sale. And we haven't quite yet gotten to the point of producing those on a regular basis. But for us, even in our stores, like we're looking at adding special refrigeration for certain types of cold cures and hash SKUs. And then there's some people that are really into consuming hash that have these little portable like coolers at home to keep your hash in that you would plug in to keep it controlled at the right temperature. So hash is a little bit more, and certain types of hash are a little bit more particular in how they should be stored. There are several forms that are okay at room temperature, just like most of what you have, like the cartridges, those are all fine, just keeping them in the coolest temp possible at your store.
That's amazing. So that was one of the things that we were looking at, was getting a little bit of a display that sort of had like some sort of cooling element on the bottom. And that way, like you could put the concentrates on top of it and then just remove the lid to keep it protected from the light. But we're bouncing a few ideas back and forth, but we want to make sure that we definitely do them right, because we have such a loyal customer base for concentrates up here.
For sure. I mean, for us at our stores, what we like to do is like our back storage area where the vaults are, keep them very cold, and we dehumidify. We'll add humidity in the middle of winter when it's really dry outside to make sure things don't dry out. That's important for your flower quality too. So I think retailers, like even thinking about your product storage, you know, behind the sales desk, goes a long way, you know, especially for preserving quality and shelf life.
Amazing. Now, Joel, before we go, I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the policy work that you do, because I feel like anybody in the cannabis industry has to do a little bit of policy work at one time or another. And I know that you are part of a couple of different organizations, and I would just love for you to kind of talk a little bit about, you know, some of the work that you're doing on the policy side and some of the organizations that you're a part of and maybe others want to get involved with as well.
Yeah, for sure. So policy work in Maine has been, I've been involved firsthand for the past, I don't know, 5-6 years. And, you know, it's something that I feel a lot of operators in Maine don't have the perspective of that. Like policy work in Maine, like it, you can get results off of some effort, a little bit of effort, especially when you join that effort with other like-minded people. And I think there are other cannabis markets out there where operators could put some work into policy, put some effort into policy work, and not be able to get like a state rep on the phone or a senator on the phone. And here in Maine, like one thing that I've kind of appreciated is like, there's been certain times where like I've needed to call the rep in the district or the senator in the district where SGR Labs, for instance, is operating to try to like get a piece of legislation sponsored that would help our business. And I've been able, and I was able to do that, you know? So I think for anybody who has an interest, like the politicians in Maine are accessible. And I don't think it's like that in many other cannabis markets, especially not the bigger ones, which is, I think, a unique opportunity for our industry. So today I'm, and for the past 2 years, I want to say 2 to 3 years, I'm president of the Maine Cannabis Industry Association. We lobby on for both medical and adult use policy work. And then, you know, before that, I was involved with, you know, just sort of like as a stakeholder who had hired our own private lobbyist to sort of like keep us posted on what's happening up in Augusta. So really what I've been involved with, I think since like 2015, especially 2016 when the referendum was on the ballot, you know, been keeping my eye on what's going on in Augusta. And then since then, there's been a lot that's happened on the medical side. You know, going from plant count to canopy, 500 square feet of canopy was something that we were very involved with and in support of. Being able to wholesale what was 70% of your product as a caregiver and retail 30% was a big thing. So getting like legal, getting caregivers legally allowed to wholesale their product was very important to the industry that we believe strongly and we were involved with. Being able to, for caregivers to have more than one employee, more than one assistant was a really important one and logical one that we fought for. Caregivers being able to have the right to a storefront, one storefront was a big one that we fought for. And then of course, nowadays caregivers can wholesale 100% of what they grow. And of course we supported that as well. So, you know, medically, those are some of the big things that we've been involved with, on the adult use side. Most recently we, what do? We passed a bill two sessions ago, that basically allowed for an entryway to check IDs in stores. It's kind of like an oversight in the drafting of the original rules for the adult use program that like, you had to check ID outside the door. So it was like the first like year and a half of the program. That's basically how the law read. So we changed that said you could check inside the door. If you had sort of, you could keep the patrons from entering physically separate from the sales floor. So that was a big one. We've streamlined this last session, some of the testing requirements. So like not having to test your trim or your fresh frozen prior to extraction, final form testing seemed logical. There's a lot of redundancy in testing, or there was. And so we made progress last session on sort of streamlining that process. I think a big one we're focused on, we haven't been able to solve yet, is the excise tax for operators. So this whole $335 a pound to the state and the adult use program is definitely needs to be reworked. And so we're really looking forward. A lot of our stakeholders are looking forward to trying to make progress. We had made some progress on it, but it basically stalled in appropriations and never became law last session. So, yeah, man, those are some of the big ones that we've been, there's many more. I can't think of them all right now.
I mean, that one, like that alone is sickening when you think of like, let's just say like, for example, like for like an outdoor plant, that excise tax could cost, you know, double to three times as much as it costs to put into the plant itself.
Yeah. It's definitely an industry killer at this point in time. And I get why it's there. It kind of, conceded that original tax structure, 10% at the point of sale, $335 flat, just to get the program launched. We knew that this was something that we'd be lobbying for in the future. And when the program started, you know, $335 was roughly 10% of the wholesale price of flower. Of course, adult use wholesale flower has come down more, and so that excise tax effective percentage is a lot higher. I mean, it's an industry killer for the current wholesale rates, and it's sickening, like the amount of money that operators have to pay. And, you know, it's kind of funny, like the state released, Office of Cannabis Policy released a third party study that was done kind of saying how it's the adult use program, the regulated program that has done more, and the medical marijuana program have done more to sort of like curb black market illicit marijuana activity main than anything else. And I think for the regulated market to continue to have success in doing that into the future, we've got to lower the cost of operation. That $335 is a significant cost.
It sure is. That is absolutely a killer. Because when you think about trying to get vertically integrated and working backwards, you know, whether you're a cultivator working forwards or a retailer working backwards, is this industry is so hard as it is with the way that the tax system operates, that something like that, you're right. It's just so limiting when we're trying to create an industry with rapid growth, but with the safety and security that is required to keep the public and the stakeholders safe. Because I think stakeholders are looking at some of this, you know, in a positive light as well, right? Like, I want to make sure that the products that we put out are the best, that are top notch, and nobody's going to get sick. And, you know, I also don't want to get sued. And so it's kind of, these accountabilities are for everybody.
For sure. And I think one of the things the industry has going for, especially the adult use industry, because everything's tracked through final sale, is like, we're really able to communicate to politicians, to stakeholders outside of the cannabis industry, like how much of a force this industry really is and has been in the state of Maine for all these years, right? So like, you know, the adult use program this summer grew to new highs in July and August, you know, $16 million months, $17 million months. We don't know exactly what the medical regulated market's doing, but, you know, I would imagine the two combined, I mean, we employ a ton of people, you know what I mean? In the medical industry and the adult use industry. And like, it's those numbers, like to be able to prove that to people is, we've never had the amount of data that we've had before. So it's a major economic driver for the state. You know, there's a lot of people employed in the industry. There's a lot of people that come to Maine and appreciate tourism in Maine that know that cannabis is a high quality product at a very fair value in either market here, which is a huge thing for tourism in general. And I think it's really important that Maine's developed that reputation in the Northeast. And I think it's very important for both industries in Maine to continue for that to be the case moving forward. Like, if you're gonna vacation in the Northeast, people need to know that the best product at the best price is in Maine. And a lot of people do, but we need to make sure that continues in the future.
100%. People come to Bud's Emporium for that exact reason. You know, I mean, they're driving from out of state sometimes, coming up here, doing their weekend snowmobiling, hiking, camping, and then, you know, they're doing whatever they need to do because the prices are just dramatically and so significantly less expensive here than they are in other parts of the country. But it's also, I think, even some of my friends that from California, they were surprised when they came out here that Maine truly has some of the best products in the country by far. You know, there's just incredible cultivators here, yourselves included. So we're super grateful for that.
Yeah, I know. It's true. I mean, we're all so sort of like far down the rabbit hole day in, day out to realize what we're doing, you know, and how it compares to other markets in the country or even across the world. And it's like, when you take a step back, it's true. Like, Maine really does produce some of the best cannabis in the country and in the world. And I think it's for a bunch of different reasons, you know, where a lot of us are just blue collar hard workers. I think cost of business here is competitive relative to other markets in the Northeast and different parts of the country. And, you know, there has been, especially on the medical side, sort of like a low barrier to entry. So you have a lot of specific operators focusing on one or two segments of the industry, of the supply chain, and just like maximizing their process and their quality and their efficiency in that realm, right? Whether it be like just concentrates or just edibles or just flower production. So yeah, and then we're all competing with each other, you know. So that elevates everybody's quality by nature of competition. So yeah, man, it's we take a step back and like it's really impressive what the market Maine's done.
It is. Well, Joel, I just want to thank you so much for all the work that you all are doing and for joining us today on Weed Buds Radio. For those that are tuned in, where can they find JAR retail locations and where can they find you online?
So jarcannabis.com. We keep up to date with our retail locations. You can find us on Weed Maps. So JAR retail location. So we have adult use retail in South Portland, in Windham, and Newry up by Sunday River on the Sunday River Access Road. We're a week or two away from opening our fourth adult use store in downtown Old Port, which is exciting. And then we have sort of like our flagship medical store in Windham right next to our Windham adult use store. So you can find our medical store in Windham as well.
Amazing. Well, be sure to check out all of those locations and be sure to head over to weedbudsradio.com. Check out those show notes. We'll have links to connect with Joel and to connect with JAR Cannabis. And of course, we're always so grateful to all of you for tuning in to another episode of Weed Buds Radio. We'll see you in the next one.